Hey, everybody, and welcome to Movie Crush, the Mini Pearl edition.
I don't understand this reference, Chuck.
Boy, that dates me.
Really?
Fucking hee-haw.
Hee-haw?
Yeah, please tell me you've heard
of it. Is that like a honky-tonk kind of show?
You don't even know what hee-haw is?
It was like a country and western variety comedy program.
Wow, that's exactly what it is.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm aware of hee-haw.
Like, if that was a whole, I would have given you credit as having seen that. That was such a good description.
It's been parodied so much, kind of, right? Like, that it's, I know it more from the parodies, I think, than the show itself.
So. Yeah. Boy, I watched that growing up. Oh, yeah, yay. Minnie Pearl was a character. I don't know if that was her real name or a character, but she was noted for wearing a country straw hat, but sort of a nicer one. And it had a price tag, still had the price tag hanging off the front.
How embarrassing for her.
That was the bit.
Yeah.
And people still, like, of a certain age, when they see a price tag on someone's clothes, they'll say, hey, Minnie Pearl.
What were some other characters' names on Hee Haw?
Well, I mean, I will say this, Noel, that there was a lot of dumb silliness, but there was some of the best, like, acoustic country.
Like picking?
Oh, my God. Just insane stuff.
That's like, cool.
Yeah. Roy Rogers. And,
oh, so there would be artists that would come on each episode and, like, it'd
Roy
be
Rogers?
A guest. Roy Rogers was a pick. He was Tumbling Tumbleweeds, right? Or is he the chicken guy?
Roy Clark.
Oh, Roy Clark.
Buck Owens and Roy Clark were the two big guys on
of
the show.
Of course. I know Buck Owens. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of classic stuff.
Well, I'll have to check it out.
But it was also pretty redneck.
Well, that's fun, though.
And sweet that America loved something like that.
How you been, Chuck?
I've been great, dude. Just a quick catch up, everyone. Big thanks for those of you who came out to see the second ever live Movie Crush in San Francisco at Sketchfest.
Oh, yeah. Busy Phillips, right?
Busy Phillips. That should be out already.
By now, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's just been released. And Busy was wonderful, and I can confirm from the backstage hang that she is a really nice person and a true honor to talk to her about her cool career and making it, man, for herself.
She just came out with a book, right?
She came out with a book. She's got her own talk show now on E, and she's just 20 years in. Everything's coming up busy, and I told her that in the interview.
That's awesome.
It's like you're making your own jobs happen.
Absolutely. That's what it takes. That's what you got
to
do.
Especially as a woman in Hollywood.
Very true.
But also for chump schlubs, because the man's always keeping us down.
They are, man.
Everybody.
Well, it's like the man just has this giant thumb that he's just pushing down on us all the time, 24/7, and we got to push back. And hence, Mini Crush.
What were you doing? You had an L.A. trip.
I went to L.A., yeah. Went to the iHeartRadio Podcast Awards, which was an experience.
I heard I won an award.
You did win an award. Jerry accepted it for you on the red carpet.
Stuff You Should Know, Best Curiosity Podcast?
Best Curiosity, yeah. Nice. Movie Crush was nominated. I don't remember in which category. Possibly Best Movie Podcast. That would make sense.
Yeah.
We did not win.
No,
but it was
all right.
It was nice to see us up on the big screen. Mm-hmm. Mario Lopez said our name, I think. You know, that was pretty – it was a big moment. For me.
Well, Noel, we can all die happy.
I know. I certainly can. But then, no, I had a great little extended trip. I hiked up to Griffith Observatory. I'd never been up there before. It was such a cool hike.
Oh, you've been up there, huh?
I'd never been.
Did you go in?
Yeah, it was incredible.
Great.
We saw the pendulum and the...
Yeah, it's all
the,
been redone, not now, but when I was living there at the end, so probably like 14 or 15 years ago.
Well, if it's been redone, they did a really good transparent job because it still has that amazing, pristine, old Hollywood kind of vibe to it. Amazing, like, murals and...
James Dean statue?
That James Dean statue,
but
really cool. Like, there's a Tesla coil that I think was the Tesla coil from the original Frankenstein movie, which was an interesting bit of info that we kind of overheard someone talking about.
Yeah, I lived over near there, so I would Scotty and I would go to the observatory a lot.
Yeah, it was great. And stayed in Silver Lake. We tried to go to the Dresden, which I know was a spot that you used to go to with Marty and Elaine, but it was too crowded. So I took Alex Williams, one of our coworkers and producers, an amazing dude, and Ben from Stuff They Don't Want You to Know and Ridiculous History. We all went. And we tried to go there, but it was too crowded.
I should have gone to the drawing room.
Yeah. We went. I'll tell you where we went. This is like, you'll probably laugh at this. We left because it was too crowded. We walked down, I guess it's Hollywood Boulevard still at that point.
Yeah. Walked west.
Yeah. Well, we ended up just stumbling on this place called the El Cid.
Oh, I know
which
El Cid.
It's an old, weird hotel type building with a courtyard, and they said it used to be a silent movie theater.
Yeah, you go down.
Down, and it's like this old timey Twin Peaks kind of like theater with like a stage with a red curtain, and the band gets ready, and then they part the red curtains and they play. But it apparently used to be a place where guests would sit in like these makeshift prison cells and be served food by inmates. We heard all the stories about what this place had been over the years.
A Papillon motif?
And it had been the El Cid since like the 60s.
Wow.
But the band that played was a goth metal band mm-hmm. called Midnight Nightmare.
That's pretty good.
It's amazing.
In fact, I'm surprised it hasn't been taken yet.
Yeah, Midnight Nightmare.
Yeah.
And it was a thing to behold. It was a really cool thing to just kind of stumbled into. We had a good time.
That's great. El Cid, Emily and I got famously day drunk there one time on like a Saturday or Sunday afternoon with my friend Brett. It was great
yeah.
time.
Yeah, I think their main thing is like flamenco type stuff, but at night all bets are off and it can be anything, whatever promoter brings in. And our night was goth night.
Very nice. Mm-hmm. I'm not a goth guy, but I could jam with
No, we're not either. It was a curiosity, you know. It was like metal. It was like screechy kind of witch vocals and synth stabs and kind of 80s sound and stuff. But it was a lot of fun. It was it was unexpected.
You know, all the years I lived there, I never went to the Whiskey a Go-Go. And I just have to do that one day. I'm just going to go and whoever's playing is playing.
Yeah. Where did I go? The Rainbow Room? No, that's in New York. What's the place where Lemmy?
The Rainbow,
The Rainbow. That's where Lemmy hung out all the time, right? There's
yeah,
a statue
I think it's
of
called
Lemmy.
Something else now, or is it?
I don't. I thought that's what it was called.
Oh, no.
It's on the Sunset Strip, I believe.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's where all the metal.
That's right.
Man, to be alive and partying in Hollywood back in those days.
I bet it would have been a thing. Yeah.
Got to read that Motley Crue book. Wow. All right. Here we go, everyone. We wasted a little bit of time, and now we're going to talk about the Oscar nominations briefly.
Yes.
Emily and I are going to do our full pre-Oscar show.
Oh,
but,
they're so fun.
I figured I could tease your mind a little bit, Noel, and see what you thought. What do you think?
There were some good ones.
The Favorite got the most nominations along with Roma. So
I still haven't watched Roma. I know you adore it.
And I haven't seen The Favorite yet, which is on my list.
I like The Favorite a lot. It's that dude, Yorgos Lanthimos, who made like the Lobster and all that stuff. This one has the same uncomfortable kind of grotesque vibe as those, but it's a little more palatable, if that makes sense. Like the other ones are, you have to really commit to this like strange kind of concept. Like, oh, the guy gets turned into a lobster, you know?
Yeah.
This one's much more just like a kind of straightforward.
Slightly accessible.
It's accessible, but it's also like, it takes you places and it's a very kind of weird, trippy movie in and of itself. Yeah.
So Black Panther, Black Klansman, Bohemian Rhapsody. Favorite, Green Book, Roma, Stars Born, and Vice for Best Picture. I think it's sort of, I will say this, I'm caring less and less about the Oscars every year. I'm going to keep doing the shows and the specials, but man, sometimes I just don't really give a shit.
Yeah, you guys watch the whole thing, but I feel like you probably like kind of tune in and out a little bit.
Nah, it's just my relationship with the Oscars has waned a bit over the years. It doesn't have the shine that it used to, Noel. No shine.
Yeah, I'm kind of ambivalent about it, too. I mean, it's always interesting to see which movies get props and which ones kind of get snubbed. And it's interesting that Bohemian Rhapsody is getting so much love when it was not really a critical favorite, which is...
Well, that's happened. And actually, that's going to be a segment next week. What we're going to do, everyone, is try and do one little Oscar bit every week leading up to the Oscars.
That sounds
but
like fun.
It's getting killed... That and Vice, in a future segment, I'm going to go over the worst Best Pictures. And Vice is getting called the worst Best Picture nominee in film history. Because it was panned by a lot of critics.
Which one?
Vice.
Vice was panned.
Not universally, but the critics did not love it.
Really? Yeah, it seems like I've heard more about like the transformative performance of Christian Bale than that it was actually a good movie.
Metacritic, if you buy into that, is 61%.
Oh, that's not great.
Rotten Tomatoes is 64.
Yeah.
That doesn't reek of Best Picture.
No, it's just barely fresh. I think 60% is fresh.
It's middling.
Yeah. Have you seen it?
No. I'm going to, though.
And it's our boy Ron Burgundy's pal that directed
it. Yeah,
McKay. Adam McKay. Mm-hmm. And I thought The Big Short was fantastic.
Yeah, I love Adam McKay. He's I'm a big fan of his. So I'm interested to see who wins a few of these, though. Spike Lee, man, this is first. I mean, he's never won a Best Director award.
Yeah.
Black Klansman was great. Give it to him.
I agree.
Although I could see Curran or Lanthimos walking away with it.
Yeah, Favorite is really a good director's movie. It's like it's very deliberate. Like every choice seems very carefully made.
Yeah,
you could see the director's kind of hand at work in that movie in terms of like the performances he gets and the choices that he makes. I think that's a big deal.
All right, I'm going to ask you this one though, Noel. Animated feature,
Spider-Verse, right? I got nominated. Did it not?
Yeah, but like if that doesn't win, are we done with the Oscars?
Well, I think it will.
But you got Isle of Dogs, which I still haven't seen. But animation was pretty great, right?
That's the thing, though, too. That's a really hard – it's almost unfair to put those in the same category because it's like to make a stop-motion movie, this painstaking like hand artisanal kind of like process versus like a CGI movie, which I know is still a shit ton of work and it's not to say one's easier than the other, but I just feel like they're so inherently different. It's hard to call them both the same kind of movie, you know?
Well, what's kind of interesting, and I think I like this in the animated features category, is there's all kinds of movies in there now. I feel like it used to be – just a bunch of sort of like Disney type kids movies.
That's right.
You got Incredibles 2 in there, of course, but you have Isle of Dogs. You have the, I don't know how it's pronounced, Mirai, the anime.
I don't know this one.
It's a new anime movie, and that's different than the rest of them. You got Spider-Verse, which is a total superhero movie.
It is.
So you have all these different kinds of movies in there, and then Ralph Breaks the Internet, which I did not see.
I didn't see it either.
I heard it was good.
I mean, I like the first Wreck-It Ralph movie. Yeah, no, I think that's a weird category. It's almost like – it's also like kind of unfair to compare all those movies just because they're animated. They're movies. They're all different kinds of movies, you know? Yeah, that's weird.
And then Buster Scruggs got a few noms.
Oh, really?
Got nominated for screenplay. And then I think Tim Blake Nelson got nominated for that song, which is kind of fun.
The one from the beginning?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then one more. I can't remember the other one. I'm just bummed. My main gripe is that First Reformed only got, I think, original screenplay by Paul Schrader. Like, Ethan Hawke should have totally been nominated.
That one kind of didn't really make a big splash. Like, I remember seeing something about it a long time ago. Like, I think it was a trailer before, like, an art movie, like a kind of a smaller indie theater.
Yeah.
And then I never really heard much about it, and I kind of forgot about it. And then you mentioned it. I was like, oh, I remember thinking
popularity
that looked really
contest,
interesting.
Once again, it didn't get the big marketing push.
That's right, yeah.
Because it's dark.
Yeah.
Dark AF, everyone.
I need to see it. I don't want to hear anything else about it. I'm very intrigued.
I'm not going to say it. It's light, Noel.
Okay, cool.
You're totally confused now.
All right, good.
I saw Glass yesterday or 2 days ago, too, by the way.
You did not care for it. I read your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. You felt like – does it feel maybe like that movie Split was so successful and that he just kind of shoved this one out to kind of like put a bow on the whole trilogy that maybe
– It certainly – like if I'm thinking of Unbreakable, which I did like, and Split, which was okay, and bringing those worlds together, which I think is a pretty cool idea, it should have been way better than this and just what happened, literally what happened in the movie. It should have been better.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's my mini review.
I don't know, man. It just reeks of like producer meddling and like someone being like, you got to push this out and capitalize on the success of this. Because Split was kind of a sleeper hit.
Yeah.
And I think people started like believing in M. Night again because he's had a couple of good ones, after so many real bad ones.
Relative stinkers.
Yeah. I mean, like Lady in the Water and like the one about the trees killing everybody and
Last Airbender.
Oh, that was like a massively high-profile flop.
Earth, like he's done some
After
pretty,
Earth was him?
I think so, yeah.
That was the one with Will Smith's kid, right?
Yeah, wasn't that him?
I think you might be right.
Looking it up live.
Yeah,
no.
Do it. No, I think
M. Night.
I think that was one that wasn't even billed as an M. Night Shyamalan movie. That was like after he just kind of wanted to like, let's keep my name out of it for a little while.
It's the Twistless.
Yep, the Twistless one.
All right, so here's what we're going to do, Noel, with our little Oscar warm-up talk there. It's going to lead right into a very short explainer bit about how Oscar nominations are decided, because I don't think a lot of people know this stuff. And people are like, oh, could this be this and this be this? Here's how it works. It's proportional voting. So if you listen to the Stuff You Should Know podcast on ranked choice voting in politics, it's sort of like that. They're about 5,500 voting members of the Academy of Motion Pictures.
So it's like an electoral college kind of situation. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Oh, okay. Go on.
Ranked choice voting.
Okay, not the same. We'll see.
Not the same. Boy, geez. In fact, so different that we would have a different president if ranked choice voting had gone into effect.
Well, I got to hear more about this. It sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. All the members. So if you're a member of the Academy, one of the 5,500, you can vote on Best Picture. But you can only vote on the other categories if you are a peer. So actors can vote for actors. Although what I did not see, surely actors can vote for actress and actor and supporting actress and actor. I need to look that up. But they say peer votes. I'm going to check that. I can't imagine they would just have guys voting for guys. That would be stupid.
That would be, yeah, that would seem inherently kind of wrong.
In fact, you know what? I'm going to leave this in there, even though it looked dumb. I was going to say cut it all out.
Okay.
Let's leave it in there.
I applaud that, Chuck. Transparency.
All right. So then what happens is that you can, like I said, you can nominate your peer category. Everyone votes on Best Picture. And then the proportional representation comes in. And why they did this was they wanted diversity. They wanted a diverse slate of nominees because there's a lot of different kind of people voting for the Oscars. And they have a lot of different kinds of creative taste. And so they want to represent that as best they can. And this seems like a decent way. So what you do on the ballot is 5 numbered slots for every category if you're eligible to vote in that category. And you only get the 1 vote, but you can choose 5 nominees and you rank them in order. And that's like the ranked choice voting in politics. You put them in order of your preference. So once your favorite nominee is eliminated by not getting enough votes, it bumps up your second vote to your first choice. So I hope that makes sense. It sounds complicated, but it's really pretty easy. So basically, in the end, if you know a movie doesn't get support, it falls away, and then it goes to the next most popular, and so on until you get down to the 5, or I guess in the case of Best Picture, 8 to 10?
In the category?
Yeah. I don't think they have to have 10, though.
Interesting. Now, that never occurred to me.
Because I think they don't this year.
Yeah. It did seem like a smaller field.
Well, it used to just be 5, and they changed that up a few years ago too.
Interesting.
So you've voted, you've ranked your things, your movies that aren't as popular are falling away, and basically any nominee that gets about 20% of the votes is going to get one of the nominations. And if you have more than 5,000 people voting, that's about 1,000 votes that you would need to get to make that nominee list. 1,000 people.
That's not that many.
In the end. And that is how it works, Noel.
Thanks for that, Chuck.
Sure thing.
I'm a little confused still, but, you know, I'm not the most...
I could draw it out on paper.
Yeah, and it would make sense.
Yeah.
Is it like brackets?
So, no. You haven't been listening.
I have too.
If you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, look, I'm writing it down.
I see. Uh-huh.
You have First Reformed, you have Buster Scruggs, you have Roma, and then you have another movie and another movie. So I voted for First Reform first, but nobody else does.
Okay.
So it gets eliminated. Then my first vote is for Buster Scruggs.
Got it.
And if not enough people vote for that, it goes bye-bye. And then my top vote is Roma. So that's how it works.
That's interesting. I get it now, Chuck. Thanks for the diagram.
All right. I hope you played along at home, everybody. Oh, and actually at the very end, everybody, after the nominees are all picked, you have the nominee set, and you get another ballot. That's how you actually vote on the best whatever. And you don't rank choice. There's no preferential voting going on. You just vote, and whoever gets the most votes wins after that. And then you just leave it to PricewaterhouseCooper to count and Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway to screw up.
Yep. Well, wait. Weren't they kind of absolved, though? Didn't it turn out that it was?
I don't know. Were they?
The envelopes were like—
Wrong?
I think they were wrong, or there were duplicates or something like that. I remember it came out that it kind of was less Warren Beatty's fault than it might have seemed originally, but now I can't remember exactly what happened.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to let him up, man. He's Warren Beatty.
What you're going to give him a pass?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He gets a pass.
Okay.
He gets a total pass.
That's fair.
All right. So, geez, Noel, I feel like we can do one more short segment. Let me see. Oh, you know what? Let's go ahead and do worst best.
Nice.
Why not? Since we're in the Oscar mood, we'll go ahead and go over that. Like I said, Vice has been sort of picked on, not well reviewed. A lot of people are saying, and this is not just like right-wing outlets, but Washington Post and other articles online are saying that politics had a lot to do with this one. Getting Best Picture nomination.
I could see that.
Because it's not kind to Dick Cheney.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Christian Bale, was it the Golden Globes where he thanked Satan for inspiring his performance as Dick Cheney?
Yeah. Maybe not a cool thing to do, but whatever.
Well, the Church of Satan was super into it. They supported his use of that.
Oh, well, dude, anytime the Church of Satan gets mentioned in the news,
they love
it.
They
retweet
the show. They're so media savvy.
Like, hey,
they're so funny. It's, yeah, totally.
All right. So here's what it might do, actually, because I noticed when you look up worst best picture of all time, a lot of people have different lists, and the list can be completely different. So this is so subjective. And rather than making up my own list, because I don't like to bash, and I don't know if I could come up with 10, I'm going to just go over the worst best from some other outlets. Okay, everyone. So we're going to start with an international edition. This is, because I like to spread the love around, this is from The Independent in Great Britain. And this is from Joffrey McNabb. And this is what he wrote. And this is his idea of the 10 worst best pictures of all time. The life, number 10, The Life of Emile Zola. I do not know that movie at all, Noel.
Nor do I, Chuck.
But we're going to go on to number 9.
Do we have years? That would be helpful.
Yeah, that was from, let me see here, 1937.
There you go. That's why.
He said it's a solid piece of work, but definitely not one of the greatest pictures of all time. Number 9, Noel, he has Rocky. He's a Brit.
I didn't know that one best picture.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good, it's solid. It's a solid picture.
Dude, I am on record as thinking Rocky is a great, great movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Rocky suffers from, and he agrees too, from the fact that it was nominated against Taxi Driver, Network, and All the President's Men.
Oh, wow.
So it gets a little stink on it.
Yeah.
But that's different than saying it's one of the worst best pictures.
That's also kind of revisionist history too, because it, like, you know, Stallone, the persona of Stallone didn't really develop the way we know it until kind of after that movie. Like, you know, that was sort of like Stallone at his Stalloniest as Rocky, but then it became almost a cliche, you know?
Yeah.
Then at the time, it was sort of like a new thing, and he could have been an auteur, but then he did a bunch of kind of more schlocky 80s kind of, you know. But people love Rambo, too. Didn't you say the first Rambo was
schlocky?
Exactly. See?
Did you say Stallonius?
Yes, Stallonius Monk.
Stallonius Monk.
That's great.
I knew that was coming. I don't see how you could list Rocky as one of the worst, though. That's tough.
All right.
Around the World in 80 Days. Of course, that was David Niven in the old school version.
Isn't it kind of a screwball-y British kind of adventure comedy thing?
And it's supposed to be good, but not regarded as like one of the best.
Yeah.
So, Crash, number 7.
Of course.
That's always on the list.
That one just did not age well.
No, man, it wasn't a very good movie.
No, no.
It's so weird that won.
And what's the deal? The guy that wrote it was a Scientology defector, and he's been Paul Haggis, and he's been on record.
He directed it too. Yeah,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, but like he was a big source in that Going Clear documentary and book, which both of which are great. And yeah,
number 6, Chicago. I think Chicago was great
with
Renee Zellweger, Richard Gere, and
Catherine Zeta-Jones. Yeah, no, it's a spectacle. It's a big old giant spectacle musical movie.
Yeah, how can you call that one of the worst best movies? I take issue with this list.
That's interesting. I mean, well, musicals are kind of, I don't know, like, it seems like the time for musicals is gone or something like that. The idea that a musical would be the best picture is maybe to some film snobs like an insult or
maybe
something.
Maybe.
I don't know.
It's like, yeah, I get it. I don't know, though. Still not one of the worst.
What else was – I mean, I would have to compare it against what else was nominated that year. It doesn't mean
– that's a good point. So, Noel, it was nominated against Gangs of New York. Interesting. We talk about that a lot. The Hours. Good movie. Lord of the Rings, Two Towers, and The Pianist. It's not the strongest.
Wait a minute. How did The Pianist not – I thought The Pianist was great.
It was.
I certainly think that
– But it was Roman Polanski.
Wow. Okay. God, I always forget that. Ugh, what a problematic
dude.
And
even though this is 2003, he had enough stink on him to although he won Best Director.
Yeah.
Geez, so forget everything I just said.
I mean, the stink that he's had on him since like the 60s, right?
Apparently he didn't have enough stink in 2003 to deny him a Best Director. I remember that now.
Yeah. I knew that movie did well, and it is a good film.
I'll take Chicago. Pianist.
Yeah. All right.
Off that list, I will.
You can have it, Chuck. It shall be yours.
Number 5, he has down A Beautiful Mind. Remember the Russell Crowe film?
Of course.
Ron Howard.
Yeah, it's fine. Right.
I think I remember thinking that. Like, that was good.
Spoiler alert, it has sort of a I See Dead People kind of twist in it.
All right, go ahead and turn it off if you don't want to hear.
Yeah.
I don't remember that. What was it?
He had an imaginary friend. He, like the guy that was talking to him the whole time was like not real. He thought – he was like a real guy. And it turns out he was like all in his head or whatever. And I can't remember.
I clearly don't remember this movie well enough. I thought it was all about math.
It is all about math, but it's also about the guy is a little insane. Like he's not well, and he's got like some form of schizophrenia or dementia or something like that.
Yeah, okay.
Or mental illness.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. That was nominated against Gosford Park. Good movie. In the Bedroom, a great movie.
Really? I haven't seen that.
Yeah, man. That's Todd Field, the guy from Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, okay.
The actor plays Nick Nightingale. He's a director. Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. Oh, brother.
You're not a fan.
No.
It's too much of a slog, probably.
And then Moulin Rouge, which I thought was pretty good. I like that movie.
It's a lot of fun.
Jeez, yeah. That was In the Bedroom was the best movie that year. All right, next on the list, number four, Marty, 1955, with Ernest Borgnine and Rod Steiger. Never seen it. I need to check that out.
Yeah, I haven't either. My holes for that period in cinema
are wide and
are
deep.
Massive. Yeah.
Yeah, and stinky.
Yeah, really, really.
All right, Noel, number three, and this is where he really loses me, Out of Africa. That was a really great movie.
A lot of people don't care for that movie.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that with Meryl Streep?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's not – I've seen that put in the category with Crash kind of before.
Well, it's got a 60% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah. I've never seen it. I don't know anything about it, but I definitely saw it come up in a similar list. It's not just this guy, so.
Well, Emily loves
– Really?
Yeah. She was really mad when I was reading her this list last
night.
I mean,
it's like a big, like, whirlwind romance kind of, like, adventure type thing, right? Like, am I just making that up? Like,
it's a romance. It's not the biggest adventure ever.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's a little slow. That was one of the knocks against it.
I see.
I liked it, but I believe Emily last night said opinions are like assholes.
They are. They're massive and they stink.
And everyone's got one.
That's true too.
Except for the movie that they made a movie about him, The Man Without an Asshole.
What? That sounds
Lifetime.
Delightful. Sounds like a real romp.
All right. Number two, everyone. Braveheart. Worst best picture. Braveheart was fine.
Yeah, man.
Again, I don't know. I don't think worst. I'm not a big Braveheart guy, though, like a lot of dudes are. There's a lot of Braveheart dudes.
It's a movie that I don't necessarily feel like I need to see again, but I liked it a lot when I was younger, for sure.
No, I don't want to see Braveheart again.
No.
That's for sure.
Freedom. Remember when he yells freedom? It's a big, it's a
yeah,
big
sure,
moment.
That one part.
It's a big moment.
That was up against Apollo 13. Good movie. Babe. Great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Il Postino.
That one was cool.
That's foreign.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. It's foreign. That don't belong in this American category.
And then Sense and Sensibility, which Emily would totally have voted for that one. She loves that.
That's a Jane Austen thing, right? Isn't that?
Yeah, I think so, right?
Big sweeping period
piece.
Yeah,
the Ang Lee film. And finally, everyone, from The Independent.
Number one.
We are going to do this every week. The Greatest Show on Earth. Cecil B. DeMille's 1952 epic film.
Is it about P.T. Barnum?
I guess so. Never seen it.
I haven't either.
He has that as his worst best.
And does he have a little blurb explaining why he feels
this
way?
Yeah, from a vantage 67 years on, the decision to give this is truly baffling. British viewers see, I mean, he's got a British slant here.
Of course.
For sure. British viewers who have seen it will almost certainly have done so on TV, where it had a 152-minute running time. Ooh, goodness. Decent cast, reasonable stunts, but surely the Academy was clowning around when they chose it over other films like High Noon and The Quiet Man.
Okay.
So that's what I do, everyone. I just read people's opinions.
That's all it takes, man, to have a podcast.
Off of my laptop.
Yep.
All right. That's it for this week, everyone. We're back in the studio again in about 2 minutes.
2 minutes.
For next week's episode. And thanks for listening.
Yeah, see you then.